You're listening to Downtown Depot, where we track the ins and outs of Waco business. I'm Austin Meek with WacoBusinessNews.com, and my guest this week is civil rights activist Betty V. Beard. Betty shares some of her earliest memories from Waco, including her relative's relationship with the World War II hero Doris Miller. And she also provides valuable insight and empathy to the immigration debate playing out across our country right now. But before you hear from Betty, it's the word on the street. Co-working has been a buzzword in entrepreneurial sectors for the last few years, but now it's finally moving into the mainstream thanks to Waco Work, a space opening on March 15th that brings activity to underdeveloped parts in downtown. Caroline Thornton is a Baylor grad and the community manager at the new co-working center at 600 Columbus Avenue in downtown. Caroline, welcome to Downtown Depot.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Austin.
So lay out the scene for people in Waco who maybe have never seen a co-working space. What is inside of this building on Columbus?
Sure. This co-working space at Waco Work is going to be really just a home for freelancers, for entrepreneurs, for small companies, for remote salesmen, for lawyers, for real estate agents. It's going to be a space for them to call home. So instead of having to post up at a coffee shop 8 hours a day, if they do that, this is going to be a place that has collaboration. So you're working with people that you may not have ever worked with or met. Otherwise, you're working with people that are in a totally different field, that unrelated field that you are, but a lot of productivity and creativity comes from this atmosphere where we stimulate connectivity.
And it's not just I'm sitting in a coffee shop and trying to work by myself. It's I'm here among other people, and oh, there happens to be coffee. Oh, here, there's a keg in the corner.
Yeah.
There's lots of cool amenities that you offer at Waco Work.
Absolutely. So we're going to have three different conference rooms that can be used by members or non-members. We're going to have a photo studio that, again, can be used by members or non-members. We're going to have, like you said, we're going to have coffee. We're going to have beer. We're going to have tea. We're going to have all sorts of things. And then on top of that, one neat thing we're going to have for members is different classes, fun things to do for our members, things like after work hours, whiskey tastings, and learning how to make espressos, and just all sorts of things to cultivate that connectivity among each other, both professionally during the day and then with your personal lives, you know. So what's really interesting about co-working is that by 2020, 40% of the workforce will be freelancers. They will be entrepreneurs. They will be remote salesmen. And so the nature of the way our workplaces are set up is all about to change. We're approaching 2020 very quickly. And I think large corporations are starting to understand that as they are getting smaller, yet more productive and more creative. And so co-working is just going to start fitting that need. And I'm thankful that Waco, we're hopping on quick before that 2020 hits. And so I'm excited.
And is there an opportunity for people who are interested to drop by and maybe just check it out? I'm sure that there may be some hesitation. I don't want to go in when someone's having a big business meeting and mess that up. What's the best way for people to get a taste of what you offer?
Sure. I mean, you can catch us on every social media platform. We have a website, wacowork.com. And then you're welcome to just stop in at any point. I mean, when we're open, we're going to have day passes available. And so if you just need to change your scenery from working at home, come grab a day pass. Come work with us. Come see what we're all about. We welcome it. You know, we are not going to be an exclusive club by any means. We're going to have members, but we're open to people dropping in 3 days a week, once a month, you know, grabbing a day pass. We're excited about that.
Caroline Thornton, community manager at the soon-to-open Waco Work at the corner of 6th and Columbus downtown. Caroline, thank you so much for coming on Downtown Depot.
Thanks for having me, Austin.
In local development news, the TIF board has earmarked $850,000 for three separate projects. A little less than $97,000 will go toward Elm Avenue Market, a nonprofit grocery at 700 Elm from Lula Jane's owner, Nancy Grayson. $203,000 will go towards the Chisholm Trail Marketplace, a Spice Village-like retail space at 924 Austin Avenue, and $556,000 for a building at 215 South 4th Street, which will house Fabled Bookshop and Cafe and seven loft apartments above. If you're looking for city dollars, now could be a great time to submit that TIF application. Brazos Commons is a $130 million mixed-use riverfront development from Joe Beard and Rick Sheldon that neighbors the Brazos Promenade from Catalyst Urban Group. The developers recently withdrew their TIF request due to disagreements with their hotel partner, Drury Plaza, so that means an additional $7.9 million could find their way back into the general coffers, at least for now. Project officials plan to reapply later this year with a new hotel developer in place. The Mars Candy Plant in Waco's Industrial District has announced a $30 million, 65,000 square foot expansion. Yes, please. And Marshall Stueman, who developed the Mary Avenue Market, as well as the co-working space that Caroline just talked about, has announced a $15 million mixed-use deal in Woodway. The Highway 84 corridor is filled out tremendously with housing, but there's a glaring lack of places to shop, a demand which Stueman hopes to meet. The proposed Outlook at Bosque Ridge would span 11 acres at the intersection of 84 and Ritchie Road, and the neighborhood center would create 80,000 square feet of retail, parks, fountains, and an entertainment venue. Vernon Davis is a businessman running as a Republican candidate for McLennan County Precinct 2 Commissioner. Vernon, welcome to Downtown Depot.
Thank you. Appreciate being here.
So to start off, take me back to the beginning. What are the duties typically associated with the role of a precinct commissioner?
Well, it's setting the budget, setting the tax rate, taking care of roads, culverts, and bridges, taking care of indigent health, end-of-life services for those citizens who pass away with less than $2,000 to their name. Also serving as an aid to communities or entities within the county who are working on interlocal agreements, and also providing a dispute resolution. So when there's disagreements between entities, government entities within the county, they come to you and you help them get resolutions so that they can move on to the desired end goal.
And for Precinct 2, that covers what area?
Well, basically, Riesel, Mart, Axtell, Elk, then come back to the Brazos River. It doesn't pick up the heart of downtown Bellmead. It kind of circles around Bellmead, out to the other side of TSTC, through East Waco, then up basically LaSalle Primrose, back to Franklin, or to Valley Mills, over to Franklin, then down Franklin to 26th Street, out to Park Lake, back to Cameron Park with part of the Baylor bubble right around campus being in Precinct 1, and then part of Cameron Park Residential being in Precinct 3.
That's quite a diverse swath, and you've got rural, you've got urban, and I saw that you mentioned in a January 13th discussion with the Waco Trib that you want to, quote, help move from a rural county to an urban county. And your ranching background gives you a unique perspective on this. You've been a city slicker and you've been out in the farm. What changes do you want to see, and why is it important for us to start thinking about that transition now?
Well, with the growth of industry in Austin and in Dallas, there is going to be a demand for secondary support companies to help support those entities. If we're blessed with Amazon locating in Dallas-Fort Worth or Austin, that is going to bring a lot more secondary support industry. Waco is really posed to take advantage of supplying the demand for those new industries. And we have a great lifestyle. We have a very affordable housing market. Eventually, they'll be through with the construction work on I-35, and then everybody will be picking on Waco because we'll have the construction work going back on in downtown Waco. But that's part of growth. But overall, we need to be prepared as a community, not just the city of Waco, the city of Bellmead, or the city of Woodway Hewitt. We need to be prepared as an entire community for our home to accept and be able to bring in this industry, for our citizens to have a better way of life and our children to be able to have property that they can then pass on.
Early voting for the Republican primary election begins next Tuesday, February 20th, with Election Day coming up on March 6th. Vernon Davis, thank you for coming on Downtown Depot.
Thank you for having me.
Betty V. Beard is a writer and activist and founder of PAC, the Parents Against Crime Coalition. She's now here in the Downtown Depot studio with me. Betty, welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So tell me a little bit about your background in Waco and your history in this area.
Okay. Well, actually, I was born just a few miles down the street in Riesel, Texas. And I've lived in Waco since I was a year old, though. And, you know, I've been in and out doing different things, but mostly my home has been Waco. This has always been my home base. And I grew up in a large extended family. I mean, really large.
Like how large?
Well, my dad had 14 siblings, and my mother had 9 siblings. So my extended family was pretty large, and now it's even larger.
Wow. What are your earliest memories of living in this area?
Wow. My earliest memories, I have to tell you, when we first moved to Waco, we lived next door to the church. Our church was Ebenezer, and Reverend Lee was the pastor at that time, and he was the minister who had baptized my mom in Riesel. He came from the Riesel area. He was a Sunset minister, but, you know, Sunset and New Zion shared, they shared Sundays because they had church every other Sunday. And as a matter of fact, both churches started out together, and when they split, they continued to have connections. So when Reverend Lee was at Ebenezer, one of my earliest memories is learning about religion and hellfire and damnation type preaching, because that's that type of preacher he was. And I was a small child, so I was really afraid, because that was during the time when the ladies used to shout, and we had pews that weren't nailed to the floor, and they were light, and they could fall over. And so as a baby, I'm sitting in the pew, and my mom's in the choir, and so, you know, if the pew goes over, you're going over with it, right?
Lots of room for activities in the sanctuary.
but the reason it's one of my earliest memories is because across the street from that church.
And
that
where was this church located, Ebenezer?
It was Ebenezer, still on Southway Hall. It's off of I-35 now, but it was on Dutton Street.
Okay.
And so now it's Dutton and I-35. But right across the street, there was a funeral home, which is no longer there, Kennard's Funeral Home, because we had all the fans for years from Kennard's Funeral Home. And the reason I can remember that is, as a child, I was so afraid of going over there. Well, the older girls that kept us would always take us across the street to the funeral home. Marva, I'm talking about you right now, and the PVs. But anyway, they would take us across the street to the funeral home, and they would lift us up, because we were kids, right? And they would put us in the casket. Well, I was definitely afraid. And some of the kids, it was fun. It was funny. But that was one of my first memories, only because it was scary. And when I was real little, I didn't want to be at church because it was the shouting, it was this, it was that, that I didn't understand because I'm a child. As I got older, I truly began to love it. I loved hearing Reverend Lee preach. We don't have many preachers that preach like that. My dad was that type of preacher. You know, you're a child, but you're paying attention. There were some churches you go to, you know, you kind of fall asleep when the preacher's preaching, but you didn't fall asleep when Reverend Lee was
preaching.
Hard
to do that with Reverend Lee. Well, my closest connection with a church service like that was when I recently was at the memorial service for Wilbert Austin.
Yes.
And getting to hear from so many of these Black leaders, many of whom were in the clergy, just go up there, and I'm inspired about this man's life that I had never had the opportunity to meet.
Wow.
But they did such a great job of carrying on the legacy of Wilbert Austin, and they bring that heat every single Sunday morning.
Well, when you say that, what I remember so vividly about him is how he loved people. And I would do some calling sometimes for his campaign, and I would hear different things from different people. And I said, wait a minute, let me tell you who this man is. Because he was always just your next-door neighbor type guy, you know, real down to earth. And if you needed something, he was there. But older people, because I'm a gerontologist and I love older people, and he had this true love for older people, he would go to their homes. If someone wanted to celebrate a special birthday, they invite him. He would go. And then he would, if somebody needed their yard cut, older people, he would answer the call. He would go and cut the yard himself. He wouldn't look for someone else to go. And I truly admired him for his concern about our community. See, I didn't grow up knowing him. I had heard about him, but I never knew him. He was like a legend already. When I was a little girl, he was already a legend, and he was a young man. But as I got to know him, I didn't have anything but respect for who he was and how he was so accessible to the people.
Well, in that respect is carried over currently into a push from District 1 Waco Councilman Noah Jackson Jr.
Yes.
Who's trying to get the East Waco Park changed to the Wilbert Austin Park.
And, you know, I know that's a controversy because it's East Waco Park, and that's a name signifying an area. I kind of like the idea of us having a Wilbur Austin Park. I mean, I really do because I'm just aware of the kinds of contributions he made. Just look at what he did with Doris Miller Memorial and how hard he worked with Doreen. And even with our organization, Parents Against Crime Coalition, one memory that will stay with me for as long as I live is when we had our first Martin Luther King PAC Family Unity Day. Wilbert Austin came out. He had just gotten out of the hospital. He had had pneumonia, and he had been in the hospital for a while. And it was freezing cold. That was year before last. It was freezing cold. And when we got over to the Bledsoe, I said, look, you get you some hot chocolate or some hot coffee or something, and you need to go home. Because he just wanted to be supportive, and he had always been encouraging, and he told me, look, I want to help you do this. I've got some contacts. I want to do this. I want to do that. And he didn't have time to do all that. He was very busy, but his heart was truly in the right place, and he was really, really supportive, and I will never forget that.
Well, there's such a terrific history of Black leadership here in Waco. Doris Miller being one of the primary examples, a war hero from Waco. But there's also this incredibly sad history of racism in Waco with the Waco Terror or with other issues that have come up even recently. How do you, as a Black community leader, reconcile Waco's history with the potential of Waco to be a city that really can set the standard for creating racial unity?
Let me say this. We still have an issue of racism with the Doris Miller history, but what's beautiful is how Waco has embraced their history with Doris Miller. Now, as far as that Medal of Honor that I'm still really wanting to push for, the only reason, in my opinion, that he hasn't received that has to do with racism that occurred long years ago when the decision was made not to give him that medal. Because, you see, he had a ship named after him some years later. And any time any person has had a ship named after them, with the exception of one in that World War I, all the other people were given medals of honor. Look it up. Every single other individual. And the only other individual that did not get that medal of honor was a man who was killed in the immediacy of that action at Pearl Harbor. He did not get, I don't know why, but he didn't get the Medal of Honor, not yet. Now, he may still be given a posthumous Medal of Honor. We want that for Doris Miller because he was recommended for it even back then. And it was the people in the South that denied him that medal. You know, there were legislators from up north, East Coast, that actually recommended him. It's important to me. It's very important. It's going to always be important. But Doris Miller was someone who grew up with my uncles, my Uncle Charles and Uncle Travis. And they went to school together. They played together as kids because he stayed down in Riesel a lot with his grandmother and he and all his brothers. And so they got to be real close. And when he came back after Pearl Harbor, he was recruiting people, and they joined the military with him. They joined the Navy. He was able to actually recruit them, and they joined the Navy. So I'm proud of that fact, the fact that their connection was strong right on up until the end. You know, he was serving. He was able to get them to serve. And I think that that was beautiful. And they both came back. My uncles did both make it back from World War II.
You're listening to Betty V. Beard here on Downtown Depot. You can find a lot of Betty's work in the Waco Tribune Herald, where she's a columnist on their board of contributors. I was going through some of your previous articles, Betty, and I found a fascinating one from a Baylor graduate named Zio Maruta, who immigrated from Greece at the age of four and started what is now a very successful company called Bambino's Baby Foods. You called in the article her story, quote, "a splendid example of how immigrants enrich lives in America and benefit the lives of young and old." How do you reconcile stories like Zoe's with the national rhetoric that we have right now regarding immigration policy?
Let me say, I have to start here. We're all immigrants for the most part. If we're not native, we're all connected in some way to immigrants. Whether they were willing immigrants or unwilling, we're connected. The stories of America's development is a beautiful one, but it's also kind of a sad one because a lot of people were left hurt and still carry hurt. And that includes Indians and African Americans. And then, of course, if you look at some of the other cultures who were adversely affected or negatively treated, you have to think about the Italians, Jewish people. You have to think about Czechoslovakians. You have to think about Germans. So when you look at the races, and right now we call ourselves white and black, or white, black and brown, but all of these various cultures that have come together to make this beautiful fabric here in America came as immigrants, and primarily. And so when I think about the story of Zoe, I think about her family being like so many others and looking at the history of America's development and the opportunities in America and just wanting to be a part of that. They came here and they did it, and it hasn't stopped. Zoe, to me, is just a beautiful role model for any American because she's what life is about. She takes what her skills and knowledge, and she builds on them, and she continues to develop, and she doesn't give up just because someone has placed a tag on, you know, a person or culture or group, you know. And none of us should, you know. And we didn't learn in the African-American community to get past what is going on. In, you know, when it comes to success for some people, because maybe the confidence wasn't there. Maybe somebody didn't teach it. But when immigrants came willingly, they came with a purpose. And you can read, you can study any immigrant that came to America and succeeded. And that's what you find. Their purpose, they may have been poor before they got here. They may have had to save up for a whole year before they got here. But they came and they were able to realize their dream. What is going on today isn't just about immigrants. It's also about the fact that we in America are getting a little crowded, some people think. And then the fabric is changing. Minority population is growing. Minority population is going to be the number one. You know, they're going to be at the top of the apex here. And then part of what's going on with people who have problems with immigration, even though they came from immigrants themselves, is they just wanted to stop and they want to figure out how can we get the majority back. And it could be whether it could be a political party, it can be a certain race of people, but it's almost as though we're taking a lot of steps backwards, you know, when some of us haven't even had a chance to take those steps forward that we needed. It's just so unfair. We need more competent legislators who can really look at this country as one where we have built and developed something special, and then be really fair about how they make decisions. And, you know, I understand that part of it is just politics and they want to get rid of a certain number of people. These people hold jobs. They do labor that some other people don't want to do. They're not taking jobs from anyone in America that wanted them. If somebody wanted to go out and pick oranges, for instance, work in the orange groves, guess what? Those groves are still there for them.
Well, and honestly, very often it's not these immigrants going and taking jobs from Americans.
No.
It's these immigrants coming here and there are enough barriers to entry that they say, hell, I'll start my own thing.
Thank you.
According to Forbes, 40% of Fortune 500 companies were founded by immigrants or their children. Just listen to these companies, Betty.
Thank you.
Apple, Google, Amazon, Facebook, Uber, Intel, Airbnb, eBay, PayPal, SpaceX.
That's right.
These are all companies that were started by either first or generation immigrants.
You know what's funny? The people who are trying to deport our immigrants all have really close ties with this so-called problem, okay? And I don't understand where, when you have a population of millions of people, how do so many millions of people sit back and allow a few hundred legislators to make bad policies? Now, how does that happen? It happens because we're sitting back and waiting for them to do the right thing. We're going to send letters. We're going to call. But there's no real action. And then when it comes time to vote, you've got these two choices. You say, well, we're not going to vote for this one because of an issue. But let's look at the real issues. Let's look at the issues of our livelihood. Let's look at the issues of what we have that we treasure about our country. Let's look at the issue regarding the welfare of all citizens in this country. How do we allow this to happen? Because some people just don't like to vote, you see, and you got such a large part of the population who just do not understand that when you vote for people who are going to come in and make policies that affect your life.
Well, and that goes directly back to what you were saying, that your vote is your voice.
Do you know what would be beautiful? For me, there are so many people who just won't get engaged because they don't get it. See, I don't care how poor you are. I don't care how. Sometimes people think, oh, well, I just don't have the energy. Find a way to be engaged. Understand that you have family members. I don't care if you've never had a child. You have a mother, brother, somebody. You should care even if you don't have anybody. Because aren't we admonished to take care of the sick, the widow, the children? Aren't we admonished to take care of older people? Aren't we admonished to do that? What about love? I mean, we don't even believe it anymore. I just can't stand to hear people talk about their Christian values, this, that, and the other. If you're not politically engaged, you're not paying attention to what's going on in your community, don't talk to me about your Christian values because I don't want to hear it. Show me. Just live it. Do it. And don't just do it in the confines of your building or in the confines of your chosen circle.
If I speak in the tongues of angels but have not love, I'm nothing.
I'm nothing. That's right. And I totally believe in that. I think we all should think about that. Faith, hope, love. We should think about that.
Betty V. Beard preaching the gospel here on Downtown Depot this morning. Betty, thank you so much for coming by the studio and sharing a little bit of your story.
Glad to be here. Thank you all for having me.
I've been working on a new segment for Downtown Depot that I hope to unveil on our next episode on March 2nd, when I sit down with another community leader to talk about what's happening in our town. So be sure to tune in on the first Friday of March for that story. Find me, Austin Meek, on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Waco Business News. You've been listening to Downtown Depot, where we track the ins and outs of Waco business.